This podcast is a part of the Podmania Podcasting Network. Check out podmania.co.uk to check out more of our great podcasts, features, reviews, match ratings and previews spanning the crazy and diverse world of professional wrestling.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Wrestling with Jonas. This is episode 135, and today's another interview episode on behalf of Turnbuckle TV. So I know that you can't get enough of my Turnbuckle TV interviews. We've done quite a few of these recently. Most recently, we've dropped an episode this past weekend with the Elliot Jordan Experience. So if you haven't listened to that one, go and check it out on all popular podcast platforms, including my YouTube channel and Turnbuckle TV itself, of course. But my next guest is a good friend of the Wrestling with Jonas podcast. We've had him on the show before. You may remember getting on for 2 months ago. This guest joined me when we did a bit of a look back at WrestleMania 9, just ahead of WrestleMania 36, and that was a really lot of fun. So it's a pleasure to reintroduce my guest, the ring announcer for TNT Extreme Wrestling, Mr. Mike Mad Dog Anger. So Mike, great to have you back on the podcast, buddy. How are you doing?
Yes, Jonas, great to see you, mate. How have you been?
Very well, very well. And even better now that I've got you on the podcast, or back on the podcast. So welcome back to the Wrestling with Jonas podcast. But how is life treating you at the moment? Bit of a strange situation with everything that's going on, and we haven't got much wrestling to watch besides what's on the WWE Network or one or two other things. But how is life treating you at the moment? Are you okay?
Oh, I'm absolutely marvellous as always, mate. I've always got plenty of wrestling to watch because I have like one of the biggest wrestling DVD collections in the UK, I think. Just hundreds of DVDs there to go through. So if there's a match I want to watch, I'll just go back and watch it. I've got it there already, you know, so.
Yeah. And what have you been watching? What matches or shows have you been catching up with lately to kind of while away the time?
Yeah, well, I've been catching up with a few WCW early ones from the early 90s. I checked out that one you'd mentioned to me about the other week.
Which one was, I can't remember exactly so what it was, but it's a
Super Brawl 91. Just checked out, yeah. Yeah. And then obviously we did the WrestleMania 9 the other week. Time flies by when you're in lockdown, doesn't it? The other week, it was what, 2 months ago?
It was getting on for 2 months ago, but that was really fun as well. A great look back with you, and I urge my listeners to go back and check that out from a couple of months ago. It's in the archives, but that was our special retro pay-per-view review, WrestleMania 9 with Mike and myself. But I mean, I was going to ask you, I mean, how are you getting your wrestling fix at the moment? You're obviously revisiting the WWE Network and one or two things on YouTube, and you got the world's biggest DVD collection as well, so you obviously got plenty to keep you occupied when the kids are quiet, of course.
That's it. And obviously the wrestling Twitter and Facebook keeps you busy enough each day, doesn't it, with whatever the latest news is or whatever. So there's always something to keep you entertained in some fashion. And things like I quite like watching I was watching WrestleMania 23 again the other day, because the funniest thing about that is I'm in row 5 in the audience on that one.
Oh wow.
So, I always spot myself straight away, and I'm like, oh, what was I doing then? What when this happened, you know? So, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, as we go through the interview, I want to talk to you about your wrestling fandom, how you got into wrestling, and kind of your favorite wrestlers growing up. I do want to talk to you about your trips to WrestleMania, because I know you've been to a couple of Manias, and I really want to kind of look back at those with you, and kind of all the fond memories and all the cool stories. So we'll get to that very, very soon. But skipping all the way back when there was a very, very young Mad Dog. Mike, tell me about how you first fell in love with pro wrestling. How did you come across pro wrestling as a fan? When did your fandom start?
Yeah, so as the young mad pup I was, it was we had the video shop at the top of the road. It was called LA Video here where I live on the Wirral. And they used to have all the WWF at the time, as it was, all the videos there. So we used to go up there once a week, normally a Friday night. We'd be able to go and get a video. And my brother would pick one and I'd pick one. And I started picking the wrestling ones and watching them. And they had WrestleMania 3 in there, which was obviously Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, yeah. Which as a kid is just, you know, watching that is just mind-blowing, isn't it? WrestleMania 4 as well was my favorite at the time, because it had the it was a double video, so a double pack video.
Yeah, so, I remember that. I mean, I was a big fan of, when I was growing up, I used to get this Silver Vision or Colosseum video catalogue, and I would go through it and I would literally spend all my pocket money and then eventually all my wages on building my collection through this catalogue. But I remember the double VHS set of WrestleMania 4, and it made it all the more special because you didn't really see double box sets like that back in those days. Certainly not for a wrestling fan anyway. So that made it even more valuable. And nowadays, I don't know where it's got to. You've probably still got yours, haven't you, Mike?
Yeah, only the other day. During lockdown, I've had a big sort out. So I was looking. I've got this has now become like the wrestling studio where I am at the moment. So I've got all sorts of bits of memorabilia about me. I've got all the figures are here in this room. So I've got the old Hasbros are here with me. Whoa. And I was going through. I've got magazines. I've got cards, sticker books. Just the lot. So it must be from when I was about, I think when I was about 5 or 6, my next door neighbor must have gave me all his wrestling stuff because he'd grown out of it. So he must have been, 8? So I got all his wrestling stuff. The only thing is he's filled in all the crosswords in the magazines, which I wasn't happy about the other day when I was looking through.
Oh, brilliant. And similar to myself, I mean, I collected some of the wrestling figures. I had the ring, the plastic blue ring with the red, white and blue ropes. But I know that we were exchanging messages through Facebook the other day, and you were showing me some of the WWF magazine covers. And I was a big collector of WWF magazine. And I mean, I remember cutting the pictures up for, I don't know, just putting into a scrapbook or making my own DVD covers or VHS covers using the pictures from the WWF magazine. Did you do similar to that, cutting out the pictures and using them for other things?
Well, yeah, interestingly enough, we used to go around to my nan and granddad's every Sunday in the afternoon, and embarrassing as it sounds, used to go to Sunday school on a Sunday morning, and then my granddad would pick us up in time to go back and watch WWF Challenge, as it was, that was on Sunday afternoons on Sky. Yeah. So I'd go back and watch that. And then you'll notice, if you ever see any of my wrestling mags, if you look really carefully on the front cover, you can actually see where I've used it to lean on and draw wrestlers on it. And you can actually see the pen marks of like drawings of Demolition and Legion of Doom that I've done in the past on there. So so it's a long history of being a wrestling fan. And, you know, I enjoy every minute. And being part of the business now, it's just wonderful to be involved, and especially with things like For the Love of Wrestling, where you get to see the guys who were, you know, we were there in the 80s and 90s and get to meet them. Yeah. And, you know, it's just it's absolutely awesome to hear some of the stories they have to tell. Some of the opportunities I've had from doing wrestling as well is just it's, you know, let me meet these guys who were my heroes when I was younger. And it's brilliant. So, yeah, love it.
Yeah. And did you used to do what I used to do and kind of using blank VHS tapes, kind of copy or record WCW, the afternoon show on Saturdays, or maybe I think they had an evening show as well. And any kind of wrestling, I used to copy it onto a blank VHS tape to watch back. And I would kind of maybe make compilation tapes or the best of tapes based on what I'd recorded off of ITV, because I didn't have Sky straight away. I don't think I had Sky until probably the late 90s, to be honest with you. But what about yourself? Did you, as well as having the kind of the box sets, did you used to kind of record and make your own stuff?
Yeah, a little bit later on, I used to record stuff, especially ones if I was there and it was going to be on. I'd, you know, obviously try and get on the camera and be like, and then, but things like, I used to get a lot from Silver Vision, as you mentioned before. One of my favorites was Year in Review 92.
Yeah.
And that was basically like covered the whole year's worth of storylines and stuff. And I had the same for 93 as well. And both of them had some, you know, cracking storylines on. 92 had like the Papa Shango storyline, you know, with the Ultimate Warrior and, you know, the Rockers breakup as well on the barbershop. So, yeah, it was surreal last year. We did For Love of Wrestling and we had Brutus the Barber Beefcake and Marty Jannetty there, and they built up a set of the, of the barbershop there. And I was lucky enough at the time to be doing a Q&A there. And I was like, if everyone would now direct their eyes over to the barbershop, Brutus the Barber Beefcake is about to cut somebody's hair. one of the guys who was there, who had like a ponytail and everything, just was like, yeah, I want Brutus to cut my hair. So we did it. And there's videos all over YouTube of this guy. I believe he was one of the fans having his hair cut by Brutus and Marty Jannetty. So
I bet he got some strange looks when he got home, but that sounds like fun. And I didn't go to last year's. I did have tickets for this year's, and of course, with the pandemic, it got cancelled and I had to get my tickets refunded, but would like to go to that sort of event. To have like a wrestling convention like that over here in the UK, especially with, you know, the big stars of the 80s and 90s coming over, it's a big deal. So, I mean, what other involvement did you have with For Love of Wrestling from last year then, Mike?
So I was working with Wrestling Travel last year. And basically, my role was to sort of help promote what they were doing for like the next couple of months, which was obviously WrestleMania trip, Wrestle Kingdom. And my sort of main role on it was really to sort of speak to the stars who were at the show and to take them aside, get a couple of photographs with our team, and also to get we were doing some interviews at the shows as well. So I managed to, captured Ric Flair. We captured Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, Million Dollar Man Virgil, and got them to have some photos with the. We had some like models working with us, and also got them to go for interviews with our interview team at the time. So it was awesome. Got to meet them all, have a little chat with them, and because they were the sponsors, working with the sponsors, it was good. So it enabled me to to get to have a chat with everybody, and also to to get them to sort of tell their stories and what they were up to at the time. A lot of sort of Mount Rushmores being told at that and everything. So it was great. Great
experience. Definitely. And off the back of all the various clips that appeared on the internet and Facebook and Twitter and all the pictures I was seeing from friends that were there, when tickets became available for the 2020 version, which was meant to have taken place, probably last month now, I was there straight away, bought my 2-day pass. And of course, as we mentioned, it all kind of went out the window. And they have rescheduled for this year, haven't they? I think they're looking to go again in October. Are you hoping to be part of kind of round two, attempts number two at this year?
Yeah, tentatively, as long as it goes ahead, I'm hoping it will. Obviously for TNT, who I work with as well, we tend to have our shows to coincide and work together with that. So we have our over 18 shows that run side by side with that in the evening. So anyone who's there for the wrestling festival and the conference and everything can then come to TNT and witness what our shows are all about. So we're having people from all over the country there. It's great to give them a taste of TNT as well while they're in town, and keep them entertained.
Most definitely. So just skipping back a little bit, I mean, well, probably even to current day, what are some of the most precious items of memorabilia you've collected over the years then, Mike? So you've shown us one or two of the figures there, the Ultimate Warrior, and we've spoken about your magazine and your kind of VHS collection of wrestling from years gone by. But have you got any other really precious items of memorabilia that you're really proud of?
Yeah, I've got some really cool stuff. So I've got a lot of the cards from the sort of early 90s. I've got full sets of like the blue, the yellow and black sets of cards they had. So they sort of coincided with SummerSlam 92. So I've got the full sets of all of them. I've got loads of random memorabilia as well. A lot of stuff. I used to go and see All Star Wrestling. That was my local show growing up. Used to go to the Liverpool Empire, and they do a couple of shows in Southport and Wales as well. When I was younger, we used to holiday in Wales and would hit the camps. So seen a lot of people and got all the. I used to love getting the autographs, you know. So I've got all the programs, but they're all autographed by the guys who are on the shows. So people like Bushwhackers, Tatanka, Marty Jannetty, Earthquake. Who else? Oh, Yokozuna. Got an autograph from Yokozuna. So. Some great little autographs there from back in the day. Jake the Snake. And I've got all that sort of thing. And then, just loads of random stuff, really. I'm actually sitting on my WrestleMania 23 chair now that I brought back from Detroit.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And I know during the WrestleMania 9 retro review we did, I think you told a nice story of when your father he's a taxi driver, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Didn't he bring Yokozuna back from a wrestling event back to his hotel, and he signed a receipt card or some sort of slip of paper to you, to Mike. So that must be something that you kind of cherish, and maybe you've got it framed, I don't know, but something that you'll never get rid of.
Piece of memorabilia, that's certainly, yeah. And just things like that are great, aren't they? So
definitely. And just looking back at that era, I mean, was WrestleMania 9 kind of the first big event when you were growing up that kind of really opened your eyes as a wrestling fan? I mean, we covered it last month, of course, but was that one of the first big events that really opened your eyes up as a young wrestling fan then, Mike?
Yeah, I would say so. I definitely, that was sort of around the time that I was really getting interested in it. And I think WrestleMania 10 may have been the first. I'm not sure if I stayed up for 9. I definitely stayed up for 10. Right. I had to stay at my grandparents' house, and it was a school night as well. But because it was WrestleMania 10 and the ladder match, I had to stay up and watch that. So, yeah, so I was probably tired in school the next day, but...
We've all done it. We've all done it. Yes, absolutely. But who were some of your favourite wrestlers back in the day then? So back from that kind of era, you know, the early to mid 90s, who were some of your wrestling heroes from, what, 25 plus years ago now, Mike?
It's mad to think it's that long, isn't it?
Oh, but, yeah.
People like Bret the Hitman Hart was a big favourite when I was growing up. I watched him through the Hart Foundation years. And then as he sort of became the Excellence of Execution, you know, seeing his rise to the top, he was great. Shawn Michaels was obviously at the Big Ten, and then he was the boy toy. And his rise to becoming champion as well, you know, watched all that. Yeah. People like Demolition really stood out for me back in the day. I saw them before I saw Legion of Doom, so I was like, Demolition, wow. And then it was only later that I sort of caught on to Legion of Doom, and that, you know, obviously saw that they were the like archetype for that whole sort of style. But yeah, so yeah, watch them all. Well,
that's it. It's strange, isn't it, because although Legion of Doom or the Road Warriors came first, a lot of people were more familiar with Demolition because they had the greater exposure, you could say, being on the WWF. You know, even back then it was still considered probably the biggest wrestling company in the world, although it's still more of a territory, a Northeast promotion. But yeah, I can understand why Demolition kind of stood out to you before you even came across LOD.
That's it, yeah. So yeah, but they were great. I always thought the Rockers were brilliant. People like Macho Man, Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, Rowdy Roddy Piper, they were all you know, the guys who were on top when I watched it. And it was I used to love them as well. They're really, you know, the people, the characters that I look back on not so fondly now. At the time, you know, they were just hilarious. People like Doink the Clown, yeah, you know, even like people just in mad colourful outfits and like with mad characters, Boss Man, Mountie, all people like that stand out as a kid, don't they? So yeah, I just loved it.
And that's why, I mean, probably the same as you, I've got so many fond memories of that era. Not only was it the era when I kind of got into wrestling, early 90s, 91, 92 and onwards, but you did have the bright, over-the-top flamboyant characters and costumes and, you know, the over-the-top commentary. A lot of the wrestling wasn't that great, but the odd match really stood out, you know, like the Bret and Owen match at WrestleMania 10 and, of course, the ladder match. So we were spoiled that year, certainly from that WrestleMania. And then, of course, you had Bret and Owen in the steel cage at SummerSlam. So 94 was a good year. 92 was a great year as far as I was concerned, with the Rumble and SummerSlam being over here in the UK. WrestleMania 8 is one of my favourites. But that kind of early to mid-90s period with all the bright, colourful characters, the flamboyant costumes, not forgetting, you know, Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, Ric Flair, all them big, larger-than-life characters. That's what kind of really drew me in.
Exactly, same here. And it was just great to watch. And they had great storylines going on. It was really blossoming at that time. And I think I was just lucky that I watched it at that sort of time. And then I also followed it then each weekend, still watching like sort of the Challenge and Superstars. And it was, you're watching it when I was a little bit older now, and it was people like Hunter Hearst Helmsley coming through, you know, and literally saw these guys from the very start of their careers. And then obviously it was the Attitude Era after that, which is I lost track of it a little bit. I was still a big fan, but I didn't get to watch it as often then. And then I'd watch every now and again. I'd watch Raw. I'd watch, and then we'd be flicking between the two because WCW would be on as well. And watched a bit. And then the pay-per-views, watched pay-per-views all the time. And that's it, you know, just kept in touch with it then.
Yeah.
Even like going through high school as well and heading to university, it was, you know, still kept on track of it.
So how would you say that your wrestling tastes changed as you kind of matured as a wrestling fan through your teens and into your early 20s? Would you say that you kind of started to enjoy different promotions, different types of wrestling? How would you say your wrestling fandom changed or matured throughout that time?
Yeah, so at that sort of age, I was watching it sort of religiously. And then as I got a little bit older, I tended to start picking up stuff like when I was about sort of 14, 15, maybe 15, 16, getting bits and bobs of ECW popping along. Yeah. So I've got the videos of ECW and stuff. So my taste tended to be a bit more sort of towards the extreme wrestling sort of thing. So I was a massive fan of Rob Van Dam and Taz. you know, all those guys watching ECW and just seeing that product that was completely different than OTT. But I still kept my eye on WWF and WCW as well. We used to get WCW was like a Friday night, hour-long show, and there was all sorts going on that, you know. And WWF was Attitude Era, so, you know, I just took it all in and watched a bit of everything, you know. And I tended to find live wrestling at that time was going for a bit of a transitional phase in the UK. So I'd see, we'd go to All Star, but, you know, and we'd see like retro legends and young up-and-coming wrestlers. And it's funny looking back at some of the programs. I've just recently got Twitter at last, and put a few of the bits that I found on there. But I've got some old match cards from sort of 99, 2000 that I've put on there from All Star. And it's people like, you know, you've still got like Marty Jones wrestling in the UK. And, you know, but alongside him is people like Roy Knight and Dean Ullmark are on their first sort of couple of years of wrestling, you know, on big shows. And just interesting to see how they sort of merged together. But it was quite a strange time. We'd go to some of the shows and we were like ECW fans at that time. And we were going to these family wrestling shows as like sort of teenagers. And, you know, there was popcorn getting thrown about and everything. It was chaos.
Yeah, I can relate. I used to go to All-Star shows at the Town Hall in Oxford City Centre. Oxford was where I grew up. And they used to come probably four or five times a year. You had the likes of the Bomber, Pat Roach, when he was still wrestling. Giant Haystacks before he went to WCW as whatever he went to WCW as. I can't remember. Loch Ness Monster. Oh my god, what a terrible gimmick that was. But Giant Haystacks, you can't appreciate how big that guy was. He was legitimately kind of touching 7 foot tall, and he must have been 500 pounds, and we was in the front row, me and my friends, and with him being the big dastardly heel, we came and we all flipped him off, and he kind of walked up to us, gave us the stare, we kind of cowered back, we nearly fell over the back of our chairs, we were that scared. And Norman Smiley, I remember seeing Norman Smiley on a All-Star show back in the early 90s, possibly before he joined WCW. And amazingly, I saw the Dynamite Kid on an All-Star show. It must have been around about 93, 94, so after his WWF run. And but he looked a shadow of his former self, very, very skinny. And yeah, but he was not in good shape then. But just to kind of say, I've seen him wrestle in the flesh is something. But yeah, hell of a time, hell of a time.
That's excellent.
Who would you say is your kind of all-time favorite wrestler then, and has it kind of differed much from when you were a younger wrestling fan to now? Have you kind of kept to the same sort of favorites, or who would you say is your all-time, you know, top wrestler of all time?
Yeah, so I've got a couple, you know. So at one point, sort of when I first watched it, Bret Hart was my favorite right up until sort of until he left for WCW basically. You know, I watched all that sort of time and things, and then and then sort of Triple H became my new favorite then after that. I just thought he took everything from sort of like Ric Flair, Bret Hart, watched them all and incorporated that into his style. And I like that. A lot of people don't like the heel character from the early like sort of 2000s. But that heel Triple H, I just thought was a masterpiece. And I thought, he carried a lot of the business on his back for a couple of years there, where I thought he was just absolutely top notch. And I, you know, thought there was a couple of times where he put on wrestling clinics and was just really impressed me. So and as well, I after reading Mick Foley's first book, I was a huge Mick Foley fan and sort of looked up all his old wrestling matches and everything. So all the ECW stuff, all his Japan stuff. Yeah. I was a huge fan of Mick Foley as well, and was for quite a few years. So sort of Triple H and Foley were sort of neck and neck. And then RVD as well, big fan of RVD. Loved his ECW stuff. And when he came in that invasion match with Jeff Hardy, just thought that was a great introduction for him to the WWE audience as well. Yeah. And just a shame his career didn't quite, bits of it didn't work out in WWE, did it? So
he became the champion once at One Night Only 2006 against John Cena. That was a memorable moment because
that was huge, yeah.
The crowd was just rabid. But I just remember John Cena kept throwing his t-shirt into the crowd and it kept getting thrown back at him. It was superb. But I was a big original ECW fan from back in the early to mid and late 90s, and remember fondly watching watching Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero go at it. And the good thing about ECW, they would kind of mix it up in styles. They would have the technical classics and they would have, you know, the cruiserweight stuff. Because I remember Rey Mysterio had his first North American break on ECW. And he was probably only about 17 at the time. Yeah, against Psychosis. He had a classic series of matches against Psychosis in ECW. And then you had, of course, the extreme stuff with Sabu and Cactus Jack and the Sandman and Raven. And ECW back in the day was awesome. It really, really was. Absolutely loved it. So I have to ask you, Mike, did you ever have a desire to be a pro wrestler yourself? And if so, did you have any training? Have you had any training as a pro wrestler?
Yeah, interestingly enough, yeah. I'll just tell you one thing. I feel like I was very lucky in that when I sort of got to like sixth form at school, it was when WWE were really sort of starting to come over to the UK more. And I tended to be able to get tickets then and go to shows. So things like Rebellion in 2002, I was able to attend that.
Yeah.
Insurrection 2003 was on my the day before my 18th birthday. So I went over to Newcastle for that. And then while I was at university as well, it was when we did the first Raw in the UK. So I went to the first Raw in the UK. I went to every couple of these started coming over twice a year then. And for about 3 years while I was at university, I went to all them shows. So sort of was quite lucky to see some sort of pivotal storylines and also moments in wrestling history in a way when you look back at it, because, you know, I was there the week after Eddie Guerrero passed away. And they did the sort of a tribute show in Sheffield, that was. And, you know, to see that. And at the time it was Raw versus SmackDown. So the whole rosters were there. It was a quite interesting couple of shows that I saw there. And then that, you know, just bits and bobs like that. I was lucky enough to be involved and get to go to them shows and have good seats as well, which always helps if you have, you know, good tickets, I find.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
And going back to your question about the training. So when I moved back from university, I went to university in Leeds. And unfortunately, while I was at Leeds, there wasn't really any wrestling going on there. The nearest we had was 1PW in Doncaster. So I used to go up to the Doncaster Dome for 1PW, which was run by Stephen Gauntley. And luckily enough, I got exposed to some other wrestlers there, which was people like Christopher Daniels, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe. They had a triple threat on one of the first shows I went to there. And it was just the fact that Bret Hart was appearing there that I caught my eye. And I went to that, luckily enough. And then we started going there while we were at uni. So quite a few of the uni guys used to drive across to Doncaster Dome for that. And, you know, from there, I saw people like Al Snow, Blue Meanie, Tracy Smothers, loads of the ECW alumni. And also, you know, like young up-and-coming British stars. So we saw like Pac, Roughneck was on those shows. Keith Myatt was on them, you know. So it introduced me to a whole sort of other side of wrestling that I didn't realize was happening as well at the time. So that was quite good exposure for me. And it was from that, when I came back from university, that I one of my friends was training at All-Star Wrestling Academy, which is literally where I live. It's just not far away at all. And I remember going and he said, come down and see what we're doing. See if you want to get involved. And I thought, that's it. This is what I'm going to do now. I've come back from university, got my degree in biology. I will now become a professional wrestler. And I went along. And it was when it used to be, it was like in a civic center by ours, all with the ring set up and everything. And I went, and my friend got superplexed and literally got superplexed onto his back and couldn't walk for like 5 minutes.
Whoa.
And that was the I went and thought, let's see what this is all about. And I was like, that's not for me. I'm not doing that. And then it was just one of them things. It was an absolute freak moments of something that could have happened to anyone at any time, and it was just a sting, you know. It wasn't anything serious or anything. And then I had a son the next year, so then I was daddy. So then I didn't get a chance to go back to train. I was busy, you know, obviously raising my son.
And priorities change, yeah.
That's it. Priorities change. And it wasn't until about 6 years later that I actually went to All Star and trained for. You know, I trained with Dean Allmark, with people like Paradox, who are up and coming now, and, you know, and others who were there. And even like trained, like Zaya Brookside was there at one of the training sessions I did. And, you know, people like that. Everybody who's trained in the UK has been to All-Star at some point to learn from Dean Allmark, because he's an absolute legend, you know, and he is. I believe, one of the best wrestling trainers in the UK or in the world, really.
Yeah, so you can handle yourself in the wrestling ring to a certain degree. You've probably taken one or two bumps in, Mike. So I'm going to get to kind of any sort of shenanigans or action as a ring announcer you might have come across very, very soon. But how did you stumble into ring announcing then? So you've kind of told us about your wrestling fandom and how you kind of thought about possibly starting training as a professional wrestler, and that didn't happen. But how did you stumble into ring announcing? Did you have like a background in, I don't know, using your voice by other means? Did you do any other sort of announcing? But how did you stumble into ring announcing for professional wrestling?
Well, I think anyone who's met me knows I'm normally the loudest person in any room, and you know, a bit of a, I like to have a party and everything. But after university, I ran our local pub, and I was the quiz master there, so I used to host quizzes all the time. And, you know, bits and bobs like that. I worked in a nightclub while I was at university, and that involved sort of running the VIP door and things like that. And, you know, involved some, you know, speaking socially and promoting events and things like that. So I had that sort of background covered from that. And then obviously a lot of my friends know I'm a wrestling fan. And it was such a random event that TNT had ran their first show at the beginning of 2015. And me and my friends, before this, had all also started going to like PCW up in Preston to see shows, like more British shows and stuff. Yeah. And it was just completely random that the guy who was helping, it was Jay had set TNT up, and he had a guy, Nick, working alongside him. He was like helping him book the shows and throwing some ideas to him. And the first show they'd had, they'd hired the ring hire, and the guy who did the ring hire ring announced the show and provided wrestlers for the show. But coming up to the second show, they wanted to get like a full-time TNT ring announcer. And Nick, the guy who was helping book the show, worked with one of my best friends in a chemical lab, basically, randomly. And this friend, he said, he must have mentioned, oh, we've got this show coming up. We haven't got a ring announcer for the show. And my friend just put two and two together and was like, you should speak to Mike Angus. And then the next minute was, I get a phone call. Mike, can you come and ring announce this show in 2 weeks' time for us? I was just like, yeah, sure. I was like, this is like madness. You know, dreams do come true. And then went, did it. It was an amazing show. It was, I believe it was going off big time, 2015. It's available on Turnbuckle TV. And that was my very first time ring announcing. And it's out there for everyone to see. So you can marvel at the moment when I called it TNA instead of TNT. And
well, I was going to ask one of my next questions was going to be, has there been any gaffes, you know, any large or small gaffes that maybe you've noticed nobody else has, or that was a big one that everybody noticed? Any gaffes as a ring announcer? We've announced somebody's name incorrectly. Have you got any stories about any gaffes then, Mike?
You know what? I when I do ring announcing, I take it extremely seriously. And I, you know, I have my notes about everybody who's going to be on the show. I then speak to everybody before the show, make sure I know exactly what they want saying. And I always try and memorize it. I'll sometimes have cards with me, but I always try and memorize what I'm going to say and you know, try and absolutely nail it. Obviously, David Starr's the one that you can go wrong on. First time I did it, spot on. Second time I did it, I missed that he's really good at Twitter. And somebody in the crowd was just going to me, Twitter, Twitter. I'm like, oh, I forgot Twitter. And then that's the easiest one to mess up, you know, because it's like the 15 nicknames. But the funniest guy, I've not, to be honest, I probably have missed if I have made mistakes, because you're just in the moment, you know.
Yeah.
One that I definitely know I did make, that this has become like a long-standing bit of banter now, is that just randomly, referee James, I'm getting his name wrong now saying it, James Greenwood, good yep. friend of mine, really great friend of mine, nice guy, brilliant referees all over the country, one of the best British referees going. And at TNT last year, just out of nowhere, I said, your referee for this next matchup is going to be Mr. James Greensmith. And he looked at me, and I looked at him, and just looked at him, and he went, and he just goes, who? Oh, and brilliant. I just looked at him, I just gone blank. I was like, what's your name?
Yeah, well, you have moments like that. You just gotta fluff your way through it, or just hold your hands up and say, oh, "I've made a gaffe." But that's really, really good. And with the David Starr introduction, I mean, I was talking about David Starr's introduction to the Elliot Jordan experience, because he's got a similar introduction, but it's only about three or four sentences or three or four nicknames as opposed to the 15 that David Starr has. Until I started speaking to you, I completely forgot that you would have had David Starr on one of your show. You would have had to have introduced him. Is it something you have to memorize, or do you have a little cue card next to you, or your mobile phone with all the nicknames? What's the secret to getting David Starr's introduction right?
Well, David says, I have a cue card, and I say, no, I'm going to memorize it. I'm just too stubborn. But which can end up badly for me if it's a nerve-wracking one, if it's a huge match and I botch it. There was one... we were doing a title match. It must have been Summer Explosion, TNT Summer Explosion. And it was Overkill Mark Haskins versus David Starr. And obviously, Vicky Haskins, Lady Macbeth, was accompanying Mark to the ring. And we got right through big introduction. You know, he's down on his knees in front of everyone. It's live all over the world. You know, it's on camera, everything. And I nailed it partway through. I just giggled about something. Something just completely put me off. I thought I was going to botch it. And I giggled and I said, and I just took one moment, and he's like, have you got it? I was like, I've got it. I nailed it. But it was there was touch and go on that one. And then the biggest one we ever did was Cold Day in Hell last year, which was the title match, the ladder match. So the big rematch from Summer Explosion. And I don't want to spoil it for anybody watching on who wants to watch it back on Turnbuckle TV. It's definitely one worth a watch. But that was my sort of biggest one. And on that one, I don't know why, but for that one, that was one of the only times I've ever been nervous, because I just thought, I've got to nail this here and get it absolutely spot on. And I think, looking back at it, I think I might have missed one. I think I might have missed the main event, because I'd already said, this is the main event of the evening, you know, so I thought, I'll miss that out. But I think David was like, you're still going to say it. but it was a good one. And then, you have to watch the show to see what happens. So, it was a big, big moment for us at TNT anyway. And, you know, he's a great guy. And I think what he's doing is, you know, he's trying his best to, you know, with the whole independent thing. I know people have sort of mixed views of it, but, you know, as far as I can see, he's trying his best to, you know, push his ideas with people. And, you know, and I think he's genuinely coming from a good place. So, all good to him, you know.
And Mike, you've been with TNT pretty much from day one. You mentioned that you kind of fell into ring announcing on one of their first shows. What's your relationship like with the guys in charge, with the guys backstage that run TNT? Is it a good family atmosphere, like you hear about a lot of local or UK promotions? And what's your kind of relationship with the top guys there?
Yeah, it's great. So Jay's the boss man there, and has been from day one, and he's an absolute legend. If you ever get a chance to speak to Jay, he's someone you're not going to forget quick. And, you know, we're in contact all the time. And, you know, sort of during the early days of TNT, there was times when it was just sort of me and Jay with the flyers out in Liverpool City Centre and posters and stuff. And then it's grown and the family's grown. We've had different people come and go. And so between the two of us, we've like been the stalwarts. We've been there for the whole 5 years. And then we've had some other great people come along and join us and work with us. We had a guy called Coop who was working with us when we were at the O2 Academy. That was a great time for TNT. Loved working in the O2 because big venue. And that's when we had some of our biggest matches. Pete Dunne versus Will Ospreay took place there, when Pete Dunne was the WWE UK champion. And Ospreay was, you know, it was one of the hottest commodities in the business as well. And it was just a huge match. It just came together for us that we could have that match. And it was just, you know, that was such a huge show there for us. And then we've had other great team members join us as well. We've got a guy called Steve who works backstage at the moment, who's, you know, a great guy. He's sort of like managing bits and bobs. We've got Liam Breverton. So Liam was the ring announcer for Ignition, because we have two separate shows. So I was doing the Extreme shows and Liam was doing the Ignition shows, which is like a family friendly show with up and coming sort of more sort of local stars as well. Yeah. And then he sort of took over more doing like ring crew duties and is like the head of the ring crew now. And we've got Kieran Moran, who's on commentary, who's great. And we've got a good ref team as well, obviously, of Greensmith and
that's the fella.
And Sean as well. Sean from up at our ICW's come down and work with us as well. So, you know, there's loads of people there, and all of them, you know, put in a good bit of graft promoting and selling tickets for them and everything. And obviously we have some great sponsors, Wrestling Travel and Pins and Knuckles Merchandise, who help us out with sponsorship. There's such a team there as well. Ben, Matt, Will doing all the, you know, the filming and everything. Kat looking after the door. Jay's mum's always there as well, keeping an eye on us.
Good. So, yeah, good. It sounds like you've got a great bunch here. You've got a great team.
It's great. And you know what? One of the things that we pride ourselves on as well is not just providing one of the best wrestling shows in the UK, but sort of the after party as well. We tend to make sure everyone enjoys themselves. We have people coming from all over the country for TNT, and we make sure that they don't forget it and that they come back, because we, you know, go above and beyond. We'll have a meetup before the show to make sure everyone can get there safe. We'll smash out a show, and then we'll take everybody out and have a few drinks and enjoy ourselves. And I think that, you know, testament to how we've grown over the years in the different venues we've had. And also sort of the, not just is the wrestling great, but we've got sort of a big family spirit with our fans, and the people, you know, have all come together and come to our shows and love them. So, yeah. And also mention the people who like do the social media as well. We've got Lucy Openshaw works with us doing socials. And we had Leanne working with us for a little while, who does True Grit Wrestling. Phil was involved from PW4U for a while as well. We had loads of great people working with us. Magic Mark Adams was in on comms, Kissick. We've also had Phil Green, who's moved over to the States now. And obviously, one person you can't forget is Tony Knox doing the photography for us. So, you know, we've got a great team of people who come together and put on some amazing shows in Liverpool. And as you'll know, you can check them all out on Turnbuckle TV. So definitely worth watching them back and seeing what we've been up to, because, you know, there's some different stuff going on. It's great. So
most definitely. So sticking with TNT then, for my listeners that might not be too familiar with TNT, what would you say differentiates TNT from other promotions around the UK? And if they went to a TNT show, what would they expect to see?
What I find from TNT is we one element that we have is the extreme matches, obviously, which is like the over 18 sort of thing. And we do have our big death match tournament once a year, which is, you know, quite a niche market. But there are a lot of people who love that sort of wrestling and, you know, the extreme matches. So we tend to have on each card one extreme match. We've also built a great women's division. We've got some wonderful ladies talent from all around the UK and the world coming in working with us. We've built a tag team division with tag belts and everything that was from a massive tournament. And then we've got the we also have Ultra X, which is sort of like an X division style. But we just recently had Project X, which was some of the best sort of up and coming lucha libre, and also that, you know, sort of fast paced wrestling talents as well. Technical wrestlers, sort of what you were mentioning with ECW. We've sort of took that sort of idea and, you know, worked with it into a UK sort of audience. So you tend to find, you know, there'll be a ladies match and then tag matches, maybe a hardcore match, title match, and all the title matches. The extreme division as well is normally contested under sort of hardcore rules. So that's when you find you have your more extreme wrestling. But it's great. We've just recently as well had a guy called Simon Hill join us doing the backstage interviews, and he's really good banter as well. I believe he used to work for Kerrang, and he's doing his own podcast at the moment that I obviously want me to mention. So keep it locked. If you know Simon Hill, check him out.
There we go. Check it out. But I mean, TNT, I mean, it's obvious that it regularly attracts talent from all over the world. You've mentioned some big names there. And of course, you know, the brightest stars of the UK, they've all passed through TNT at one time or another. But have you ever been starstruck by any of the wrestlers that's come through TNT, whether locally or from abroad? Have you ever been starstruck by any of the wrestlers you've had to kind of spend any time with or announce to the ring that you're either a big fan of or maybe hadn't seen before? Have you got any kind of stories like that?
Yeah, there's been. I've worked with. I was looking the other week. Are you familiar with the Babyface app?
Yes.
So I was looking the other day to see who I'd ring announced for in the top 20, and I'd ring announced for 19 of them at TNT.
Good going, yeah.
So, the only person I hadn't ring announced for, which we've been talking about, I speak to Jay from TNT almost every day, and we were saying, I've still not ring announced for Cara Noir, randomly. So the Black Swan, so Cara Noir, we're watching you.
He's got to get up there. Got to get up there. Yeah, he's been on pretty much every other promotion, but he's got to get on TNT. Yeah,
that's it. Exactly. Get him involved.
Anybody that you've been kind of like, I don't know, starstruck or starstruck by that you've almost, I don't know, fallen over backwards because you're in their presence?
You know what? I've worked with sort of people from, you know, from the highest talents now. So I just enjoy working with them and speaking to them, you know, at their own level. It's absolutely marvelous to work alongside them. I tend not to be someone who gets starstruck as such. But, you know, I just enjoy my job, enjoy what I'm doing. And, you know, I really appreciate getting to speak to them, you know, at that level. And, you know, there's so many of them, just almost all of them are sound, you know, and it's just great to meet these people. You know, people like your Will Ospreay, Tyler Bates, Pete Dunne, Jody Fleisch, they're all just nice people. And they're going out there and absolutely smashing it. One of my sort of favorite stories I don't like to tell it too often, but an interesting match. One of our favourite matches we had there was Pac versus Pentagon Jr. And the interesting thing was, I was sitting backstage before the show and was introduced to Pac, shook hands with him and everything. You know, very respectful, nice guy, had a little chat with him. And then Pentagon Jr. came through and it was the first time they'd ever met.
Wow. And I bet that was a show-stealing match. I bet that was just truly awesome.
Yeah, it's available on YouTube and on Turnbuckle TV, and it's one of the best matches on the card. And I just couldn't believe it. It was the first time they'd ever met, and that was it. And then an hour later, they had one of the best matches in TNT history. So, but it's just amazing. And that's something, thinking back about something like that, that's when you sort of think, wow, you can be starstruck from that, because it's like, how did them guys, you know, do that? How have they just gone and had the best match of the card when they've only ever met each other once?
And when you're sitting at ringside after announcing the wrestlers, the bell rings, the match starts, what would you say has been the best ever match that you've witnessed from the comfort of being the closest person to the ring as the announcer? What would you say is the best match that you've seen as a ring announcer that close to the ring?
Yeah, I always get told off for being in the shots and stuff, so... Like, move, mad dog. I have to make sure I'm in a nice spot where I can still see what's happening and keep in touch with him, but not be in the way of the cameras and things as well. So it's always in the back of my mind. But so I've seen some absolutely awesome matches. So El Fantasmo going up against Rey Fénix was absolutely insane. And that was the same night as Pac versus Pentagon Jr.
So
that was one of them nights that just blows your mind. Pete Dunne versus Will Ospreay was amazing. And, you know, I've been just so lucky to see all sorts of great matches. Just trying to think what else we've had. We've had just great tag team matches. Kings of the North and Purge always have great tag matches. And some of the hardcore matches we've had, just mind-blowing. If you're into sort of extreme wrestling, check out either of the DOA tournaments. Last year's won by Mickey Whiplash. This year's Clint Margera. Both just mind-blowing shows, honestly. And they're, you know, they're just well worth a watch. And at some point, them two guys will clash at TNT. And that's something we can all look forward to. So
amazing. But being at ringside, I mean, things must get a little bit hairy from time to time for you, Mike. You know, being so close to the action, especially with the kind of extreme part of TNT. Are there any instances where you've got tangled into the action, whether intentionally or unintentionally? Can you tell us about any moments where you've kind of got involved?
Well, at TNT, I tend to stay out the way. I meant to say, with my my wrestling training myself, I trained for getting on towards it a year with Dean Allmark and the guys at All Star. And then unfortunately I had a car crash, so I wasn't able to train or even like go to the gym for like a couple of months. And that was when my ring announcing took off even more. So then I was really focusing on the ring announcing. But after lockdown and everything, if I can get back into a decent set of shape, I'll do the old Dennis Stamp and get on the trampoline again, get the weights out, and you never know.
There you go.
The mad dog might have a match. You just never know. But, I'll go back to a story. Just before I went to Las Vegas last year, I was awarded Ring Announcer of the Year by a company. And so I was accepting my Ring Announcer of the Year award. And Pitbull, I don't know if you're familiar with Babyface Pitbull.
Come across him, yeah.
So he came out from the back and decided to take exception to the fact that I'd won this award and was thanking everyone in the back. it was his opinion that I was brown nosing a little bit, but I was just, you know, merely thanking the people who'd, you know, helped me get to where I was. But yeah, so he dropped me on my head anyway.
Oh, nice, nice. But congratulations on the award. Very much deserved. I need to ask you, where did the nickname Mad Dog come from then? What was the kind of the idea behind that? Is it something that you had at school, or is it as a kid, or is it just something that's happened during your kind of ring announcing career? Where did Mad Dog start?
You know what? It left out to me. I was watching Shawn Michaels versus Diesel, Good Friends, Bitter Enemies. And if you remember, Luna Vachon says Bob was the famous Mad Dog Vachon.
You got
and
it.
His leg came off, and yeah. Then that was something that stuck in my mind. And then when it came to ring announcing the first show for TNT, someone says, you need a nickname. I was like, I don't need a nickname. I'll just be Mike Angus. And then somebody who's been on numerous nights out with me was like, you've got to just be the Mad Dog. You're a mad dog. You're mental. You're mad. So I was like, yeah, Mad Dog, that'll do. And then randomly, just when it came to ring announcing what my name was, I just said it as I was announcing, and that was it straight away. People were like, Mad Dog, that's great, you know. And then you know, it just went from there. So every now and again I get somebody saying, don't be, you're not Mad Dog, just Mike Angus. Yeah, but then the crowd start chanting Mad Dog and doing their old Rick Steiner so yeah, it's just it's just stage, you know.
Love it.
So that's where it's come from, and it's probably you know, going to be around for a little while yet. So
definitely that nickname. It kind of, I suppose it kind of suits your personality, your character, and it's part of you now, isn't it? So it's got to stay.
Exactly, and it's paying respects as well to, you know, wrestling history. There are a few Mad Dogs about,
of course.
But until you've been out with me for a drink at an after-show party, you've never met the true Mad Dog.
There we go. How would you say that your ringing out style has changed over the years? Have you noticed the difference in kind of as you've been ringing out for 5 years now? Have you noticed a change in your style of ringing out? And have you made any conscious decisions to kind of change your ringing out style in any way or another?
Yeah, certainly. With I also work for Wrestle Ireland, Britannia Wrestling Promotions, and the LWF up in Chorley as well. And I've worked for a couple of other people as well, but they're my main companies that I work for. And you tend to find with them, there's a lot more of a family-friendly audience. So with that, I tend to you know, be a bit more smiley, happy, and also the level of sort of banter and, you know, sort of chicanery is on a higher level, you know, a little bit more pantomime maybe, but things like, you know, the raffle, we can go OTT on the raffle and stuff, just making sure everyone has an enjoyable time. Whereas at TNT Extreme, I tend to be a lot more focused on what we're doing. And because it's, you know, it's all getting filmed and everything, it's a bit more serious, and it's got to be that level of professionalism that other ring announcers, you know, there's great ring announcers around the UK, people like, you know, Simon Cassidy and Slick, and, you know, making sure that you're on the same level as them. It's about making sure that you get over the wrestlers and make sure you get their details across the crowd, and really help that entrance, that wrestler's entrance, you're making it and getting that information to everybody in the crowd who doesn't know, you might not know who these guys are, and you've got to get across with your introduction. You know, the way you can phrase your voice and everything, you can make them into being a big star just by the way you announce them. And that's what I aim to do. I want to make sure that what I say means something, and also it gets a message across, but also it's not about me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's about getting the guys over and making sure that the audience can feel the excitement levels and of who these people are, you know. So yeah, that's what I try and do. And you know, I try and say I'm trying to be the most helpful ring announcer in the UK, because I'll watch every single match on the card. And if anyone wants to know what I thought of their match, I'll tell them honestly. And, you know, I'd like to think that I can be an honest critic and, you know, tell people exactly, you know, how they've got on and everything, and, you know, help them develop. And, you know, what we want to see is more people just, you know, being amazing. And that's, you know, what we do see. So it's good.
Yeah, something I'm quite intrigued by, and off the back of kind of your last answer, is there like a little community of ring announcers across the UK? Do you all keep in touch? Do you have like a group chat on Twitter or something like that? I mean, or is there any kind of like friendly rivalry or banter between all the ring announcers? Because you've recently done this, challenge on Twitter that was going along where their microphone was dropping down from the ceiling, and that was really, really fun. I absolutely loved that. But is there a bit of a community or a bit of a group of ring announcers you kind of communicate and stick together once in a while?
Well, I've been lucky enough that a lot of them have worked with us at TNT or been through TNT in some aspect of their career, and then have come from all over the country, and they're like, oh, I ring out here, I ring out. So, and I've been lucky enough to be at things like the, I went to PSI, WrestleCon, you know, all like wrestling shows. You meet people through that and everything. But I try and keep in contact with everybody, and, you know, I'll say hello to, you know, Tom Campbell up at North Wrestling's a great guy. You know, he does the radio shows and everything. I like his work.
Yeah, yeah.
Jonathan Millard, the voice of the Vale, you know, I always check out what he's doing. A lot of them do podcasts and things like that. And, you know, I've in some way or other, I've met most of them because I try and get around to go and see shows all around the country. You know, at the end of the day, I like to know what's going on and, you know, keep my finger on the pulse of things. So, but it was only recently that actually me and Mark Adams were speaking on a different podcast that he does. And we'd said afterwards, you know, we should set up a, you know, a ring announcers group to get this TikTok going. And then it was from that we now do have a ring announcers and commentators group for the UK, which has got, you know, sort of everyone is in there now, and we just sort of interact on that. And, you know, so, and I think somewhere there's probably a database somewhere of how everyone likes to be announced, you know. So if you have someone new coming, you can check the database and make sure you've got their details right before you meet them.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Let's switch back to your wrestling fandom then, because I've probably mentioned once or twice on this podcast that I was at WrestleMania 34 back in the day. I went to SummerSlam 92. I think I was about 16 years old back then. I've been to numerous WWE events and independent shows around the UK. While I was out in New Orleans, I was lucky enough to see some independent shows and take over New Orleans. I've been to some UK takeovers as well in Cardiff and Blackpool. But you've been to quite a few shows yourself, and we've spoken about one or two of them. Now, I think I may have alluded to at the top of the show, you've been to two WrestleManias, if I'm not mistaken. I think you mentioned WrestleMania 23, and you're sitting on the WrestleMania 23 chair there. But any kind of like special moments from these big shows that jump out at you, and any kind of like really cool stories? Because I know that you've been to one or two Hall of Fame ceremonies as well. And some WrestleCons, and really interacted with some of the big international stars over at these shows. Any kind of special memories or cool stories that you can tell my listeners about?
Yeah, of course. So WrestleMania 23 was a real special one for me because it was when I'd graduated from university and decided I should treat myself and actually, you know, have a bit of an adventure. So I decided I was going to go to WrestleMania 23. It was a lifelong dream. And it was in Detroit, and it was looked like it was going to be a really good card the way it was building up. So I got my tickets for that one from through WWE, through travel packages. And I thought, if I'm going to go, I might as well go and get the best. So I got like a platinum package for that. So that [S2] Nice. [S1] Was like the top deal. So that [S2] Yeah. [S1] While I was there, that was just, you know, they look after you with everything. I said to my, you know, a lot of my friends were like, how much are you paying for that? We might come. And when they heard how much I was paying, they were like, oh, no, you go and enjoy that. We'll see you next another time, you know, for a UK show. So, so I just went to that, and there was loads of stuff going on with that. We were put up in the Marriott Renaissance building in Detroit, Michigan, which is the tower you see on the whenever it shows Detroit, it shows like the five towers, and it's that building is the hotel. And I had an amazing time. It was the Stone Cold's movie, The Condemned. It was the premiere of that on the Friday night. So we got to watch the premiere in the Fox Theater in Detroit. And then at the end of the movie, when the credits are playing, Austin's music hits and he comes out and has a beer. And I was sitting front row at that.
Oh, yes.
Watching the film. So Austin actually came, Stone Cold comes out with the beers. He's giving beers out to everyone in the crowd. He's like, what did you think of my movie? You know, and all that. You know, Austin 360 says, you just watched my first ever movie. You know, cheers, and all that, you know, so... That was crazy. And then the next night was the Hall of Fame. So Mr. Perfect got inducted into the Hall of Fame. And that was an absolute random one because it wasn't that late on in the afternoon. It was sort of I remember it being sort of probably about 5 o'clock in the afternoon it started or something like that. And as everyone was coming in, my seat was right behind where the wrestlers have like the front section of the theater. My seat was the first row behind them. So Jimmy Hart was sitting in front of me. And I had all sorts of, you know, all the superstars are in front of me. So I think I had Ricky Steamboat, Jimmy Hart, Sergeant Slaughter, Harley Race was like the row in front of me. So I was just like, this is amazing. Legends. And as everyone came in, they all had like a procession of them all coming in to get their seats. So I got photos of them all in their suits and all that sort of thing, you know. And then that was Miss Perfect got inducted on that one, and JR got inducted. And it was great. Really good Hall of Fame. And then afterwards, the nearest bar came out, crowds everywhere. And there was the coaches for the wrestlers were there. They were getting coaches back to their hotels. And all the guys are getting onto the coaches. Pat Patterson is at the front of the first coach. And he's sort of directing traffic. Get on the coach. Get on the bus. Get on the bus. Crowds of people in the street. I'm trying to get along to the first bar, which is at the back where the coaches are. Thinking, I'll get in this bar, have a beer, and wait till it's calmed down a bit. As I'm trying to get past, there, Rob Van Dam's come out, and it's in Detroit, which is obviously his hometown.
Yeah.
So he comes out into the street, and Patterson, the whole place is going nuts. RVD, RVD, chant the RVD, you know. And then Pat Patterson's like, get on the bus, Rob. Get on the bus. And Van Damme's like, hey, it's my people, RVDs. You know, doing the whole RVD. The next minute, he jumps over the guardrail and gets crowd surfed off down the street. And Pat Patterson is losing his mind. Rob, what the? What is going on? Going absolutely nuts. And everyone's just going, it's just, he's getting crowd surfed off down the street. It's just madness. So.
Oh, wicked stories. Really,
that
really
was amazing.
Good.
And then, and I made it to the bar anyway after sort of 10 minutes of seeing Van Damme. He got back on the bus and the bus has pulled off and everything.
Oh, you made it onto the bus finally. I bet Pat was relieved.
Yeah. And the bus just went. I went into the bar, went up to the bar, went to get a drink. It was a young lad from Liverpool. What was I? How old had I been at the time for that? Must have been 21, probably 21, 22. Old enough to have a drink at the bar anyway. And went up to the bar, and the guy next to me, I look across, it's Michael P.S. Hayes.
Nice.
Free bird. And I said to him, oh, Michael, it's absolutely an honor to see you. You know, can I get you a drink? And he's like, what's that accent? You know, where are you from? I said, oh, I've come from Liverpool for the show tomorrow. He says, oh, well, I'll get you a drink. Michael Hayes bought me a Jack Daniels and Coke. And he says, there's no point just getting one Jack Daniels. He bought the bottle of Jack Daniels.
Wow.
Bought the bottle of Jack Daniels and like a platter, like a New York platter of food sharer. And he gave me a drink. And then he's like, do you want some food? And I was just like, you have a chicken wing. And then he introduced me to his wife and like one of his friends and stuff. And I end up sitting with Michael PSAs and just having like an evening after the Hall of Fame, an evening with Michael PSAs, just chatting to him.
Oh, amazing. Well, I got a very similar story to that. I mean, when I went to New Orleans a couple of years ago, and I was literally just off the plane, taxied to the hotel, changed my shirt. Directly outside the hotel was Bourbon Street, obviously Bourbon Street, sorry, a famous party street, lots of clubs, lots of bars. Within half an hour, I was kind of walking down Bourbon Street, went into a bar. Who was there but Tommy Dreamer? And I spent the next 2 hours chatting and drinking with Tommy Dreamer, and just them sort of moments you're never going to forget, are you? Kind of like half an hour, literally less than an hour of landing in New Orleans, and I was there drinking with Tommy Dreamer. But that was an extraordinary time. But your story about RVD being crowd surfed, Pat Patterson going wild, and then eating a platter and drinking JD with Michael P.S. Hayes. It doesn't get any better than that. It doesn't. And that's it. You know, as wrestling fans, those are the sort of memories that we cherish, isn't it? And that will kind of live along with us until we're long gone. But
I've got loads more. You know, I've been so fortunate. Some of the things I've ended up going to that I've met people like. I went to WrestleCon in London in 2015. And ended up staying in the hotel that it was at. I thought, might as well stay at the hotel. Not often you go down to London. So stayed in this hotel they were at. And first thing I did when I got there was go to the bar. And it was surreal because just everybody who was at the wrestling convention was just at the bar. And it was like Gangrel, Tatanka, Nasty Boys, Alberto Del Rio, Brett, Sean. Just everybody was just there at this bar. And it was surreal because you went to the bar and then I spoke to Gangrel just very briefly because it was when I'm familiar with Dean Allmark and one of his students as well, Tyson Taylor, Terry. And I said to Gangrel, David Heath said, Dean and Terry said to say hello if I saw you because I mentioned them I was going. And he said, oh, yeah, come and sit down with us. come and sit down with us and have a chat. So went and sat down with him just from saying, Dean and Terry said hi. Gangrel invited me to go and sit down with everybody, and I was very near my birthday, so I was like, hey, let's have a round of shots. That's why they call me the Mad Dog. But let's have a round of shots. So I got a round of shots for everybody in. All had a shot. And then one of the nasty boys, it was Brian Nobbs, just turned around to me and goes, it's time for you to sit under the learning tree, kid. Listen up. And they just started telling stories and chatting away. I was just like,
wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Chavo, Demolition. They were all there just sitting around this one table. And it was just surreal. Just sitting around listening to all the stories. I just sat there and just listened to what they were saying. It's great.
It sounds like you've met and you've had some wonderful times with wrestlers kind of in the flesh, whether it be as a fan or as a ring announcer, but being in the business yourself. But are there any wrestlers that you haven't gelled with or who haven't been on their best behaviour when you've bumped into them?
Yeah, people always manage to get this out of me, even though I always think I don't want to speak badly of anybody. You know, that's sort of my thing. But I'm not going to not be honest with you. So at that particular convention, Alberto Del Rio, the next day when it came to the actual convention time, was not in a good mood whatsoever. And I went up and spoke to him, went up to his desk and was like, to grab a photo. And he's like, I don't want to do any photos now. And I was just like, you don't want to do any photos? I was like, I'll pay. I'm paying. It's like, just get a quick photo.
That's what he's there for.
Exactly. So I was just sort of like, that is odd. But anyway, so I just took a photo of us anyway, a selfie. And you can see in the photo, he's just absolutely fuming. He just doesn't want to be there, So I was just like, mate, if you're going to be like that, I've met everybody, everyone's been lovely, and you're sitting there in a bad mood, whatever it is, I'm here to enjoy myself. So I just took a photo, I was like, cheers, see you later. And he's just like, I was just like, you're going to be like that. But you won't believe this. This is the most surreal thing about it. I'm at the bar that evening. This is afterwards. I was there for 2 days. He comes up to the bar, spots me, comes up, and I'm just like, here we go. And he goes, I'm so sorry. I've got terrible hay fever.
And that's why he was in a mood.
Apologized to me and was like, I'm sorry, I've got hay fever. And then asked if there was any chance I could go to Boots and get him some hay fever tablets. And I was just like, as it was Sunday, Boots wasn't open, but it was just surreal. But the fact, but to me, the fact that he actually came up and apologized, shows, at least he's he might have been a bit off, but at least he came and apologized. But anyone else he met in that day is not going to go away with a good opinion of him, are they? So
yeah,
but anyone can have a bad day, and that's the thing, they are in the public eye a lot of the time, and you've got to give them the benefit of the doubt. I saw Randy Orton once as well. This was when I was in Detroit, WrestleMania 23. They do a signing in the morning. And Randy Orton was, you're meant to be able to pick signing room A or B. I think you get it with your ticket. And, it's where you meet like five or six superstars and then get a photograph with them. So the room I had was Torrey Wilson, Hardcore Holly, Jeff Hardy, and then CM Punk. And you also got a photograph with Mr. Kennedy and MVP, which was cool. So I was like, that was nice. Met all them guys. Program autograph, get your photo, out you go. But I wanted to go in the other room as well. So I managed to sneak into the other room as well. I was like, yeah, B, that's me. Went in, no issues at all. No one even batted an eyelid that I was strolling in there. So that was RVD and Sabu with a photo in that room. So I was like, yeah, got to meet RVD. And then at the table itself was Kane, William Regal, I can't remember, and maybe Candice Michelle. And Randy Orton was at the end. Met all these people. Got to Randy Orton. He's asleep on the table.
Whoa.
at the autograph session. So I'm like, Randy, okay to sign this? Yeah, sure. Head down on the desk. Sign the thing. I was just like, but yeah, don't know. But that was sort of during the time he was having a few, you know, issues, I think. So
I'm sure. He probably had
random anyway, that he's just got his head down on the desk. So anyway, bearing in mind the people who were actually meant to be in that room meeting him, and he's just there, head on the desk, signing without even looking. I was like, oh no. But
too many shandies the night before, by the sounds of it. He's feeling sorry for himself. Who knows? Listen, I've got a couple of listener questions from our Wrestling with John's Facebook community page. First of all, we've got John Searle, and he asks, I know we spoke earlier about what matches you've really appreciated being up close and personal as TNT Extreme ring announcer, but he asks, what is the best match you have seen live?
Okay, as I said, I've been fortunate to see so many matches live. So TNT wise, Pac versus Pentagon Jr., Ophidian versus Jordan Devlin, Rey Fénix versus El Fantasmo, and Pete Dunne versus Will Ospreay, probably four of my favourites we've had at TNT. And they're all on our YouTube channel or on Turnbuckle TV to watch as well. So worth, if you've not seen any of their matches, to check them out. And then I've been lucky enough, obviously, to go to WrestleMania 23. So my favourite match at that was Undertaker versus Batista. Really stood out as like a match that was a bit of a... I wasn't expecting, you know, obviously Undertaker and Batista, both great guys. And at that time was one of Batista's hottest spells. But, you know, that match really delivered. And it was a really surprising that it was so great, you know. Agreed. That was my first time seeing Undertaker live as well. So there's a video on my YouTube channel of that I filmed at the time. And obviously, spoiler alert, but he did win the title in that one as well. So to see Taker the first time and he wins the belt, that's a huge thing for me. So that was personally a real special moment. And then I also went to Miami for WrestleMania 28. And two of the matches that really stood out as well, which is obviously the Hell in a Cell with Undertaker versus Triple H.
Great match. Great match.
So for that WrestleMania, I was sitting in about row 100. Me and my friend Pete, Texas Pete, absolute living legend himself, went to that one, and we were sitting in about row 100. But as the Hell in a Cell comes down, if you watch carefully, you can see me shaking the Hell in a Cell, because I'd managed to get down onto the floor and I'm front row for that match. So why do people pay so much to go to wrestling shows and then go for toilet breaks during the match? Just come on, you've got to be more organized than that. You can't leave a seat free on the floor.
indeed,
I was seat hopping for that one. But you watch that back, as the Hell in a Cell comes down to the sounds of Metallica, you can clearly see me at the front on the front of that as well. And loads of my friends took photos and put them on Facebook and stuff and made them see me on TV. So
I'll go back and look out for you on WrestleMania 23 and WrestleMania 28 now. So I've got to look out for the Mad Dog on those, definitely.
I'm easy to spot. You know me. I'm in my DX t-shirt I'm row 5 to the right-hand side. I've got some clips, actually, I can send you if you want to see me. But and 28, when the Hell in a Cell comes down, I'm shaking the Hell in a Cell. And obviously at that as well, Rock Cena was amazing, because I'm not a big John Cena fan as the wrestler. Obviously, as a person, he's an absolute hero. But, you know, his wrestling character in the story, I'm on the, one of the ones who's not a fan of him at all. So when the Rock, spoiler alert again, but when the Rock beat him at that WrestleMania, that was amazing. You know, one time only, and the Rock winning that was a special moment to be part of in the Rock's hometown. So that was great.
And I really enjoyed CM Punk versus Jericho, that one as well. I thought that was a good match. And that was where you had the 18-second Daniel Bryan Sheamus match as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, that lost the crowd for I'd say a good hour at that show, because that started the Yes Movement, really. That, I think it was a bit before that, but when that actually happened, people in the crowd were disgusted by that.
It pushed them over the edge.
There was people near me, bearing in mind it was the first match of the show and it was 18 seconds. There was people going nuts. People were going for hot dogs and toilet breaks then, because that, and literally anyone else was just outraged by it. They were fuming. A lot of people had gone, were looking forward to seeing that match. Interestingly enough, didn't tell you this one, but I was in Miami for the Hall of Fame the night before, and managed to get back to the hotel where the wrestlers were staying and went to the bar there. And I was talking to Sheamus the night before and got introduced to his dad.
It sounds like you're the person to hang out with at all these big. You managed to get into the important places, all the big places. That's incredible. I got one more question for you, Mad Dog, and that's from Graham Fisher, also from the Jonas Facebook group, and he asks: is there any one moment you have seen in the ring where you have gone, "Wow, that was a moment that stole the show"?
Yeah, there's been a couple of times that's happened. One was the night after WrestleMania 28 in Miami, and at the end, bearing in mind they'd been chanting yes, yes, yes for the whole show, and Daniel Bryan didn't even appear on the show. That was one thing. Daniel Bryan almost stole the show by not even appearing on it. But at the very end of that show was when John Cena came out and cut a promo on calling The Rock out, and Brock Lesnar returned, and that stole the show that night, because that was one of them moments where it's like, whoa, you know, he came out, Cena was all in his green, you know, Fruity Pebbles outfit, and then that was when Brock came out and delivered that F5, and then he kicked Cena's hat away and all that as well, and it was that was a special moment to be part of. And a couple of people have stole the show in the UK when I've been watching them. One was the OJMO. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Yeah.
He had a match, a triple threat match at TNT, and it was with El Fantasmo and Scotty Davis. And this is a clip that's recently been doing the rounds on, I believe Kieran Moran shared it on Twitter and Facebook. And it is where, at the end of the match, El Fantasmo takes my bottle of water off me, drinks a bit of it, screws the cap back on, and the guys he's just beat are down in the ring, and he throws the bottle of water at Scotty Davis, and the water bottle's flying through the air, and OJMO just sticks that hand and catches it. But if you watch that clip, it was absolutely insane. And if you watch the clip as well, you'll see my reaction to it, because I'm standing behind El Fantasmo, and he's going nuts because of what's just happened. He's throwing this bottle of water, you know, as the heel at this guy he's just beat down. And then OJMO just sticks out that hand and catches it out of nowhere. And he had no right. Stealer. He had no right whatsoever to catch that bottle of water. If you watch the clip, you'll see it literally was something where he just like suddenly, and you know, obviously it's absolutely on the spur of the moment. He just sticks out that hand and catches it in midair, and it is insane. And that stole the show because it was just
the
like,
fans erupted.
Have a watch of the clip. What I'll do is I'll send it over to you so you can include it with this if you'd like, as we've spoken about.
Yeah.
And one other one as well that really blew my mind randomly was when I used to go to PCW quite a lot up in Preston, and there was one show, it was their third anniversary, where they'd advertised having a special, you know, guest entrance in one of the matches, and it was the guys in the ring for this triple threat match were Mark Haskins and Bubblegum. I don't know if you remember Bubblegum, but anyway, they did the whole who's it gonna be thing, you know, and I don't think anybody expected Austin Aries to walk out at that moment, at like literally one of the highest points of his career, to suddenly stroll out into this triple threat match there on the first match of the card. And the reaction to that in Evoke in Preston was just insane. And, you know, looking back at that, it was just one of them. It was like he wasn't part of any of the stories or anything there. And he just was in Preston that night. It was like when Hangman Adam Page showed up last year against Pac, it was just, you know, indeed, what is going on? Why is Austin Aries here? It was just like, and it was, you know, that was a really good surprise. So that's what wrestling's all about.
That's what's great about being a wrestling fan is these kind of moments that you're not expecting, the kind of wow moments, like Graham said, that steals the show. And it just reminds you of why you're a wrestling fan to begin with, doesn't it? But there we go. Thank you, John. And thank you, Graham, for sending in them questions. But
thanks, guys.
Mad Dog, that's the end of your chat with Jonas, your second appearance on Wrestling with Jonas, a special kind of interview with yourself. Before we let you go, we can't let you go without giving you an opportunity to throw out some plugs. We know you're now on Twitter, so you can give us your Twitter handle, but where can we find you on social media? Tell my listeners where they can reach out to you, say hi, and learn more about the Mad Dog.
Yeah, mate. As always, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. It's make sure, obviously, to check out my the companies I work with. So TNT Extreme Wrestling all over Facebook and Twitter. Wrestle Island. Make sure you check them guys out. Great family-friendly show on the Wirral. LWF up in Chorley. come up and see us there. You know, we have a great little family audience there in the Army Reserve Centre in Chorley. And Prestat in Frith Beach, we do Britannia wrestling promotions with Steve Saxon and the gang there. Make sure you come and check those out. I am the Mad Dog Mike Angus, obviously. I'm on Facebook at Mike Mad Dog Angus. Check me out. I post all my wrestling memorabilia, collectibles, and any podcast interviews I'm on, John, so I make sure to share them out for people. Always trying to help out any friends in the industry with merch and anything like that. I'm on Instagram as well, Mike Mad Dog Angus, and also the brand new Twitter. Please check the Twitter out. It's only a baby. So it's at Angus Mad Dog on the old Twitter there, and you'll see me putting up some banter on there as well. And just want to say a big thank you as well to our sponsors, who is Wrestling Travel and Pins and Knuckles, who always look after us. And once again to you, Jonas, what a great guy, mate. You're doing a brilliant job. I've been watching your shows through lockdown. I saw the one with Jess and John the other day. Yeah. That was wonderful. And just keep doing what you're doing, mate, because you're doing great things. And, you know, and as you said, this will be on Turnbuckle TV. So good friends of ours, Richard Turnbuckle there, all doing great.
Yeah, and, thanks, Rich.
Everyone's all together during lockdown. And that's what the wrestling community is all about.
We're all delivering, aren't we? We're all delivering.
That's it, mate. It's an honour to speak to you. And hopefully catch you at a TNT show later in the year. Well, as soon as we get back going, we'll be we're raring to go, and we're ready to provide some extreme wrestling for everyone in the UK. So just look forward to catching up with everyone soon. Big hugs from the Mad Dog.
Well, thanks, Mad Dog. Really appreciate it. So please keep it tuned to the Wrestling with Jonas podcast. And if you've enjoyed listening to his podcast, please don't forget to spread the word. Tell your friends and tell your family. Don't forget to subscribe to the Wrestling with Jonas podcast on whatever platform you're listening to us on, or maybe on YouTube. Hit that ever important subscribe button so you can be notified every time a new episode drops. Thanks again to Mike for being a fantastic guest on the Wrestling with Jonas podcast. I'm sure there's many more of these conversations to be had with Mike, so can't wait to have him back on the show sometime in the future. Thanks again to Turnbuckle TV for being fantastic sponsors. Really, really appreciate you kind of allowing me the opportunity to have a channel on Turnbuckle TV. So please check out all of my previous interviews, which are also on Turnbuckle TV. And thank you to everybody that's watched this or listened to this interview. And take care, have yourself a good week, and catch up with you all again soon.